This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is Juliana McIntosh.
And I'm Brad Sutton.
And this is the Art of Drinking with Join Jules
and your favorite uncle. This is the best home bartending podcast
where you learn how to make two drinks,
a classic
and a twist,
plus a little backstory on the cocktail.
So you have an interesting story to tell when you serve your guests
your home crafted masterpiece. Well, Jules, here we are. Parentheses again.
Yeah, this is the second time I'm seeing you for this recording.
Yeah, big surprise. You had some tech issues there.
Yeah.
But you got a new computer and you got it sorted out. And so we're re-recording a couple parts of this podcast, namely parts one and part four.
Yeah, it's great that I have a new computer because if you've tuned into our YouTube, I'm going to look so much more crystal clear now because my camera on my other computer was just horrendous. So we're making small upgrades, minor tech issues. I apologize yet again.
Yeah, the YouTubes are pretty raw.
I know. But we're doing it right. We're back. And we're doing a very good recipe today, which is actually one of my favorites. And Brad, you have had firsthand experience with the origin of this cocktail, so you really know how to make it right.
Yeah, this was a cocktail that I had no idea existed. I ordered one when I was skiing in the Alps, which sounds bougie, but it's not as bougie as you think. Yeah, I was skiing in the Alps, and I had this cocktail, and it is just blew my ever-loving mind. And let me tell you, when you say chartreuse and hot chocolate, which is a verchot, which means hot green, it will make you fall off your chair and then run in a circle on your shoulder like Curly or Homer Simpson, Curly from the Three Stooges, which if you're listening to this and in the age demographic that I think you are, you probably have no idea what that is. But Homer Simpson used to do it. And that is exactly what you'll do because this is just absolutely flipping unbelievable. These two things were meant for each other.
I would be hard-pressed if you don't like chartreuse that you wouldn't like this combination because there's something about...
It just changes.
It changes. It totally changes. And it is so delicious. It's such a magical combination. Please try it. Do not... And I will say if you ran out of chartreuse and you want to try this cocktail, please go get it. Please go get it and find it. Hold it close, hold it safe, but try it in this cocktail.
Or hang out for the tips because we've got a couple of get close alternatives to chartreuse.
Yes.
But here's the other thing I'll tell you, and I don't go into this in too much detail in part two, but this drink, where you're using 2 ounces of chartreuse, you can use 2 ounces of rum. They have a drink, same deal. It's rum and hot chocolate. And I'm going to tell you, those two flavors also belong together. So we got options for you and we'll talk about that. And we're going to get into the history behind this drink and where it came from and kind of my thoughts on how this all came together. Let's move on to making the drink.
Well, I will say before we, last thing, I know I'll wrap it up.
Oh, last thing. All right, what we got? Here we go.
My recipe, I made it not the way it was intended to be made for personal reasons. I wanted to shake it instead of stirred. Brad, I talked to you after. I was like, should I? I feel bad. And you were the one who said, actually, A, make it how you like it. And B, martinis can be shaken over stirred. And I tried it both ways. I liked it this way. So for purists out there, please do not crucify me, but do it whichever way you like. I will make note to both, but I really enjoyed the cocktail both ways. I just preferred it the way that I did it. But I think it's a really interesting recipe. It's taking Brad's classic hot chocolate. We're using some white creme de cacao. It's really delicious. So whether you're making Brad's or mine, make sure you have that chartreuse. That's the key ingredient. Or stay for the tips so you can find a chartreuse alternative.
Or use rum.
Yeah. I think this is a really good episode. So just sit back, buckle up, relax, and get ready to have your life changed. All right. Uncle Brad, I don't know about you. Maybe it's just that time of the podcast, but I'm thirsty.
Yeah, I'm thirsty too, especially since I've already downed one of these this morning, well, this afternoon, and I could go for another one.
Yeah, I have to just make a note again, and I'm going to say this throughout the whole podcast, but I love this one.
Yeah.
I think I love this one too, because it makes it so special because of our green chartreuse in there. So I'm excited for people to try this at home.
Yeah. And the thing is that, hey, look, if you don't have green chartreuse, you can't access it. We'll talk about the tips, like we said, here in a little bit, some alternatives. But I mean, there isn't a great alternative to green chartreuse. However, this is delicious with rum. And I used a Martinique rum and a overproofed, a 151. I kind of did a split base, one-to-one. So know that you've got options. And trust me, this is pretty damn good with rum too. So,
ooh, I'm excited. All right. Oh, so yeah. Brad, I'm ready.
Let's get into the Verschel. Looks like Vert Schaud or the Chocolat Chau au Rum, but we're using chartreuse today, not rum.
Yeah.
I'll walk you through both.
Okay.
So we've got I'm going to walk over here to my cocktail making station. Uh-huh. Here I am. And we've got our hot chocolate. Okay. So that's this. And I made homemade hot chocolate. I'm not going to go through how to make homemade hot chocolate. Just look at the show notes. It's in there, how to make it. It's super easy. So don't feel like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to do this. Oh my God, it is so easy. So just—
We'll put it on the podcast website, theartofdrinkingpodcast.com. So you can check it out there too.
Yep. So hot chocolate, I've got my wet whipped cream. And what I mean by wet is that it's been whipped to the point of almost being stiff. So it's still a little runny, kind of like what we did in episode 26, Irish coffee, very similar. Mm-hmm. Got a little cocoa powder, and that's just to dust the top with. And then, of course, I've got my green chartreuse.
Yes.
And let me tell you, I'm glad I stocked up on this stuff. Let's begin. I'm going to go 2 ounces of green chartreuse into my glass coffee mug. And I chose a glass mug because I wanted to be able to see.
Yes.
I don't want to see a layer of whipped cream on top of the hot chocolate. All right, this has been pre-measured to 6 ounces. I've got a 10-ounce mug, 6 ounces, so 2 ounces.
I'm so jealous.
Plus 6 ounces. I'm now currently at 8 ounces. So I'm going to give my wet cream a little stir here. And then I'm just going to pour it over the top of my spoon.
Yes, little layer action.
Oh my God.
I just got like a little happy tummy right there. I'm so jealous for you right now because I know how good this tastes.
Oh, and then a little dusting of cocoa powder there on top. Boop,
boop, boop. Stop it. Boop, boop, stop it.
And this, my friends,
look at that,
is your après-ski moment. Let's give it a taste. Oh my God, that's good.
Come on. Long winter. It's cold. I want something that I can have for a little dessert, a little boozy. Ooh, that's it. I love it so much.
This is just so elegant. You know what's cool is, I mean, honestly, when we got done skiing, we'd have one of these. And I actually had one in the middle of my ski run, but it's so great. And then I've made them after skiing here in Minnesota, which isn't elegant, but we do it. And this is just a perfect warm-up after you've been outside and kind of, you know, doing the outdoorsy thing in the wintertime. So put this thing in your rotation. It absolutely should be there. And we'll talk about the history here after you get done making yours.
And Brad, I do want to add one little tidbit too. It's not the exact same recipe that you just made because there's a special ingredient, but July 2024, in a cocktail book called Pretty Simple Cocktails, there may be a Join Jules version of this drink coming out. And let me tell you, it's so good. I just think that this is such a fun one, but it is slightly different. So make sure 2024, get this one.
2024. I can't wait for that book to come out. I've seen the pictures. I've seen the recipes. I can't wait to see it.
I know, physically hold it. Okay, so we did the hot chocolate, which please, please, please run, don't walk, make this. Now, I wanted to make a riff on this. And my first thought outside of adding hot chocolate and chartreuse together and doing my recipe that I'm going to have in the book, I want to do something different, obviously. So I was thinking, there's the cocktail that I think we talked about, maybe it was the last episode or a couple episodes back, called the 20th Century Cocktail. And it's using white creme de cacao, which is chocolate.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to look for a chocolate cocktail that I can incorporate chartreuse in. Well, I did some research and I did some digging, and it turns out that this riff has already been made. It was actually designed by a Canadian bartender, Jay Jones, from the Poor House in Vancouver. And it's called The Prospector.
Look at you doing the research.
I know, right? So it's called The Prospector, and it's taking the 20th century cocktail and it's riffing off of it. And it's this. So you're going to need cognac, white creme de cacao, green chartreuse, and Cointreau. And what we're going to do, we're going to start out. I'm so excited to make this. 1.5 ounces of cognac.
That's a great noise.
I know. Boop. 1.5 ounces into our cocktail shaker. And what's fun about this, outside of the white creme de cacao, which I'm sure you could find a French version, I feel like this is all European. You got French cognac, French chartreuse, French Cointreau. So this is pretty French.
This is very French.
It's very French. Okay. So 1.5 ounces of cognac. And then the last three ingredients, you're just doing 1/2 ounce of each, which you'll be happy about that you only have to use 1/2 ounce of your green chartreuse. But trust me, a little goes a long way. So 1/2 ounce of green chartreuse. By the way, I haven't cracked this bottle in a while.
I know. I was... I grabbed my chartreuse and it was like, oh, you're back.
Yeah. Haven't seen you in a while.
You haven't held me in so long.
I'm so cold.
You don't
cold.
Bring me flowers. it was very lonely.
Sad. Oh, no, that's funny. It's so true. Everybody's going to, when they make this, do the same thing. So 1/2 ounce of Cointreau and then 1/2 ounce of the white creme de cacao. And I believe in the article I read, I didn't write it in my notes, but it talked about how white creme de cacao in the 20th century, it's an underrated element of flavor. And I feel like mouthfeel too. It adds such a nice touch to these martini style cocktails, if you will. So I think that we should have more white creme de cacao cocktails. So anyway, we have 1/2 ounce of white creme de cacao, Cointreau, chartreuse, 1.5 ounces of cognac, cocktail shaker, ice, give it a shake. It smells so good. I mean, come on.
Really?
Anything with the green chartreuse in there has my heart, but I'm going in.
What's it taste like?
Oh, it's so interesting because it's so mellow. It really is. You think it would be very strong. And it is. It's a booze-forward cocktail. It's all booze. But I think it's so interesting the way that the white creme de cacao and the chartreuse play together. It almost mellows the green chartreuse flavor to where you get the flavor on the back end, but you get the sweetness from the Cointreau and you get a nice sweetness from the cognac too. So there's nice layers, but it almost is giving, like if you were to have a Manhattan, right, where it is booze-forward, stiff drink, but this is way more mellow, way less sweet, really nice blend of flavors. It's nice. It's really elegant.
I probably should have commented that mine is very spirit forward, even though it's a rich, creamy chocolate that's in here. But the chartreuse, it's 55% ABV, which makes it 110 proof. I mean, it's a heavy hitting Son of a gun. And so Spirit Forward is the way this cocktail runs as well. So we got two Spirit Forward cocktails here, which actually I kind of like, I'm a Spirit Forward cocktail kind of person.
I know. Well, and I think with this recipe in the original, the one that he made, another version you can do, I like it shaken because I like more dilution in such a Spirit Forward drink, which is why I shook it and put it in a coupe with no ice. What he did and what you can do, I like this better, but what you can do is mixing glass, stir it with ice, no shaking, and pour it into a rocks glass over ice. So it would almost be more of like an old fashioned where it would start to mellow if these flavors are too strong for you. So I think you can do it both ways. I prefer this because I like a light sip of like a booze forward, but it's preference. Both are good.
And purists might get upset because you shook a cocktail without citrus juice in it. But again, I've seen martinis shaken. I've seen Manhattans shaken. And yeah, by the book, you're supposed to stir them. But if you want to shake the cocktail because that's how you like it, fine. You can shake the cocktail. I think it's to each their own. I like a Spirit Forward cocktail that then begins to mellow in the glass. So I might pour it over the rocks.
Right.
Although I've got to try it this way with the shake.
I like it this way, but it is it's totally preference. And if you want to do it classic the right way, which you know I don't do right, I always try to do something different. Stir it and pour it over ice. Okay. And try it that way.
Well, cool. I'm going to bust some of those out tonight. And I've got a pot of hot chocolate now. So we'll do a little taste test comparison.
Yes.
Well, nice stuff, Jules. Should we get into the history?
Yeah, let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
All right, Brad, I've got my cocktail. I'm ready for your history lesson.
Well, I happen to be ready to give it. So here's a deal on the Verschil hot chocolate with green chartreuse. The history on this is really obscure. In fact, kind of unknown. So what I've done is I've done my research around the history of chocolate and hot chocolate. And we'll talk a little bit about a recap of the history of chartreuse. And we'll even talk a little bit about skiing.
Ooh.
And we'll get to what I think is the likely story behind how this found its way to a mug together.
Right.
And from what I understand, the name Verschil is kind of a recent adaptation, but nobody knows who started calling it that. But it simply just means hot green.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's just hot green. So that's what Verschil means. Well, let's talk a little bit about the history of chocolate. So do you know where chocolate came from, Jules?
Belgium?
No.
Dang it.
Came from the Mayans, actually. So they think around 500 BC, the Mayans, who had a really advanced knowledge of not only astronomy and the calendar, but also agriculture. And they were the first to cultivate the coca tree. And so they were cultivating it and they developed a beverage that was made from coca beans, water, chilies, and other spices. And it was served cold and it was very bitter and very spicy. So eventually the Aztecs got a hold of that beverage because the Mayans and the Aztecs, they were right next to each other. The Mayans were kind of on the Yucatan Peninsula area of Mexico, right down into more of Central America, where the Aztecs were more central Mexico, both coasts. Mexico City, right, used to be the Aztec capital right before modern day Mexicans built on top of that ancient city. So the Aztecs got a hold of it and they started to sweeten it a little bit and started drinking it hot. Well, one day the Europeans show up, specifically one Hernan Cortez. And he arrived on the Yucatan Peninsula in 1517, and he was actually searching for a passage to the Pacific from the Atlantic, which obviously wasn't, the Panama Canal wasn't there, right? They land, and what do the conquistadors do? They conquer, right? They explore, they conquer, and it's a really kind of a bloody thing and a sad history, but history nonetheless. And from there, they were introduced to cinnamon, nutmeg, all these different spices in the Caribbean and Central America, but also chocolate, and specifically this hot chocolate drink. So by the mid-1500s, After he was done doing his thing over there, he comes back to Spain, brings with him hot cocoa and all of these spices that we talked about, introduces it to Spain, and they love it. They just run crazy with it, right? And eventually it spreads up into Europe in the 1600s, but it's expensive. And so it's really reserved for nobility. And so as it's traveling into Europe, France and Spain, they share a border. Mm-hmm. And so it makes its way, obviously, up into Paris. And I believe it was 1615, chocolate was introduced for the marriage of Louis XIII and Anne of Austria. And then Louis XIV got a hold of it once, he took over for Louis XIII. And he started to popularize it in all different types of forms, right? Like they were putting it in everything and French cuisine and really kind of made it a part of French cuisine. And then Marie Antoinette comes along, who was married to Louis XIV, and she brought with her her own chocolatier. And again, takes it to the next level. So there's all these Louis. And by the way, do you know there were 17 King Louis in France?
Jeez.
17.
You know what? There was the trend of the same letter, right? This is just an earlier version of it, apparently.
Yeah. Well, it was actually Clovis, who was actually Hlodwig. He was the person that united the Franks, right, in what was became France. Mm-hmm. So Clovis was an adaptation of Hlodwig, and the Latin adaptation of Clovis became Louis.
Huh.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And so everybody
wanted to be Louis.
Everybody wanted to be a Louis. Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So still something that was in the hands of nobility. And it wasn't until the Industrial Revolution, which happened in 1848 in France, that hot chocolate became something that people who weren't nobility and royals and super rich, they could get their hands on. So let's talk about chartreuse for a second. Now, if you remember, chartreuse comes from the French Alps.
We
right?
love it. Yeah.
And it was 1605 that this manuscript was provided that had this elixir for long life. And they tried and tried and tried to make it and had all these different versions that didn't taste good. And eventually it was around the mid late 1700s. They came up with a version that was palatable. And then the government kicked them out of France and they went down to Spain, right? And now they're down back in Spain where hot chocolate first hit the European shores. And then they come back to France and then the French government kicks them out again and says, no, we want you out. And then they try to take over the recipe for chartreuse. And the people are like, this sucks. We want the French, we want the monks back. And so they come back. So you've got these monks who have set up distribution, right, sometime between the late 1700s and mid 1800s. So chartreuse is being distributed around France. And then we told the story about the captain in the French Alpine military, this garrison, who came in to taste test yellow chartreuse. And he's like proclaimed that he and his troops shall demand chartreuse wherever they go all around the world, right? Because chartreuse is so delicious. All right. So now we've got chartreuse. And now this is a thing up in the Alps. By the way, hot chocolate was a ration that was given to the French troops. And so they're putting hot chocolate and chartreuse probably together, much like the right. British sailors put gin and tonic together, right?
Yep.
And so these two things come together. Now, I found this to be interesting. So at the top of the episode, I talked about how I stumbled onto this drink. And it literally was something I just stumbled onto, right? I was in a chalet somewhere between Briançon and one of the other cities that I was skiing to. And I ordered this vert chaud drink, but I ordered two of them because I didn't know that vert chaud chocolat au rum was two drinks. I thought it was one, and I ended up getting two drinks. And so I actually got to taste them side by side. So here I am in Briançon.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
I know. It was actually, I was like, okay.
You know what we call that? We call that a happy accident. That's exactly what
it
we
was
call
a happy accident.
Yeah.
So skiing is a Nordic thing, right? Like no surprise, skiing was invented. No, actually, there's a cave painting somewhere up in the Nordics that goes back to 2000 BC that shows a early human on skis, not like modern day skis, but there was a way to kind of travel through.
They were
but it was a way to travel through the snow to hunt, right?
Wow.
So skiing stays in the Nordics and they invent skiing. And then eventually it was like 1864. It was at like a World's Fair or something. This guy from Grenoble sees this exhibition about skiing and he's like, oh my gosh. So he takes what he learned and then he starts to invest in materials and designs for skis. Well, eventually, by the turn of the century, skiing becomes a part of the French military requirements for the Alpine regiments. Mm. And so now they're skiing. And the first ski school for the French was in Briançon. And I had no idea.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah. So skiing is invented, or at least being trained now in Briançon. And so what happens? They bring a taste back for chartreuse, because we know chartreuse has been established in the French military.
Yep.
And they, of course, probably put these two things together and they start introducing it to their friends and family because it's absolutely delicious. And the birth of hot chocolate and chartreuse comes together. And it probably happened, I would imagine, around the 1900s, if not maybe even the late 1800s, which eventually becomes Verschot. It is so unbelievably delicious. How it hasn't become a thing here in the United States, or how this isn't something on like menus, I've never seen it on a menu.
I know, me neither.
But if you serve this to your guests, especially after like a cold day out in the snow or in the winter or the rainy, wherever, whatever winter's like where you're from, man, this is lights out good. I can see why this maybe have even been kept a secret right up in the Alps. But man, I'm telling you, the secret's out and y'all need to start drinking this.
What's funny about that is one of the reasons why I didn't just post this everywhere that can be seen is because I want to save it for my book next year and really promote it out there. But I made notice to be aware if I saw it. And even still on this round of holiday drinks and winter drinks, I haven't seen it. And so it's so interesting because, it's so good. Like once you have it the first time, because even if you don't like the flavor of chartreuse, I would be really surprised if you don't like this combination together.
Yeah. If you don't like the flavor of chartreuse, that's too bad.
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
This would be it really is sad. You can go with the rum version, right?
Right.
But like this, the chocolate does something to the chartreuse. Mm-hmm. It like brings out these, not like peppermint bonbon mint, but like brings out like this minty quality to it. That's not, again, it's not like one of those Andes mints thing. You're just like,
right.
It's just a hint of bright freshness. And then you've got this alpine, rosemary, kind of like, I don't know. It's all these really cool herbal flavors that come together. It just, and by the way, chocolate and spices and herbs, they were meant to be together.
Totally.
They really were. And this is like the perfect combination.
I agree. I think I say that too. Like if you don't like the flavor of chartreuse, I think the chocolate brings out the ingredients that are in there that work well with chocolate. So those spices, right? Those warming spices is what I feel like comes through. And it's so good.
Were you with us? With us. I mean, we got lost. So we didn't end up meeting people in Briançon the way we wanted to.
I was a day behind.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So your Uncle Tom and I think Terrence and Steven were there and we were all going to meet up in Briançon while we're out for Ian and Ani's wedding. Right. And they were out at some place in Briançon, like just like one of the restaurants there. And it wasn't ski season, right? It was like October.
Right.
But they were at a little local pub or restaurant and they ordered chartreuse and hot chocolate and not even knowing. Right. And they were like, oh my God, this is so good.
Yeah.
That's all a game changer.
I think I ordered it at some point throughout the trip because my sister Luciana was just like, oh my God, my life has been changed. I'm drinking this all the time. So, and I will say on the topic of skiing, après ski, there are a lot of cocktails, warm cocktails that are centered around skiing, the après ski lifestyle. I don't know if it's, I would think it's more so the European skiing because Luciana went skiing in the French Alps in Italy. And there was another cocktail. It was called a Bombardino. And I think that was on the Italian side. And that's a sweet, warm cocktail too that I had never even heard of. I think that there's an untapped European cocktail menu that I just want to explore because every time I've had something, I'm like, oh my God, why don't we have this in the States?
Well, we need to talk about pecan in one of these episodes too, because that was another little happy accident. I have like a pecan is a, it's a bitter orange liqueur. I'll have a better description of this when we talk about it. That goes in beer. And I was sitting again in a ski chalet. I wanted a beer. And I was like, I saw this beer go by. I'm like, what's that? And like, oh, that's beer picon. And I was like, oh, I'll take a beer picon. I thought it was a type of beer, like a Budweiser.
Sure.
That sounds a little crass. But no, it's a combination of these two things. And it's like, oh my God, this is so good.
And Europeans who may be listening to this right now are like, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up. Don't
shut up, rabbit. Shut up, shut up.
Yeah, you're saying too much. You're saying too much. You're giving too much away.
Yeah, you're ruining it for everybody.
I know.
Yeah. If you've never been to the French Alps skiing, I would say that if you've skied in the United States and you're like, God, this is so expensive, for what it costs you to ski over a weekend here in the United States, you could ski for a week in France. It's so, so incredibly cheap because the French government wants skiing to be affordable by all citizens. And I tell you, where I was skiing in Briançon, it was, I think, 65 euros for a ski pass for the day. And that place rivaled anything I've been at in the United States. So anyways, that's my shtick on why I go skiing in the French Alps. Not just for the drinking, but it's beautiful. And there's lots of reasons to go. And all right, well, let's talk about tips, man. Because you know what? Chartreuse is in short supply. So how do we get something else in there?
All right, we are picking up where we left off with our tips section. And Brad, you've wanted to speak to this before. I think we talked about you trying to find some chartreuse substitution. So I just want to rattle mine off quickly, and then I'm going to let you take the floor. But I recently was at a Italian liquor store, or it's just an Italian convenience store up in Sacramento when I was home for the holidays. And he imports everything all over the place. And one of the things I've noticed with the chartreuse shortage is they're trying to find better substitutes. So we tasted a brand. It was called Izarra, I-Z-A-R-R-A. And they had a yellow liqueur and they had a green liqueur. Now, I will say, if you're looking for a yellow chartreuse alternative, the Izarra yellow liqueur is the closest thing I've found to a substitution. It's slightly sweeter than I feel like the yellow chartreuse is. Now, the green Izarra, I didn't like it. I didn't think it was a great comparison. I thought it was way sweet and not as herbaceous as chartreuse. But if you're really in a bind, it can get by. But I recommend the yellow liqueur from them. Now, I also have two other brands that I've used as a substitution that's worked. Faccia Brutto is one. I think it's herbaceous. I think it works pretty well. It's not going to have as many herbaceous notes as chartreuse, but again, when you're in a bind. And then the other one, and I apologize for my pronunciation, Veritable Genepi Légemois.
Oh, that was beautiful.
That wasn't bad, right? So that one, I think, is also a great substitution as it leans more on the absinthe side. And I tend to like that strong absinthe flavor, that anise, right? So I think that that's also a great substitution that you could use. But Brad, I leave this up to you now.
Sure. So I've been in search of as well. One thing, so you mentioned yellow chartreuse. I've been seeing yellow chartreuse on the shelves here and there.
More? Okay.
Well, so good. For whatever reason, it's not getting picked off as quickly as the green chartreuse is here.
Then I'm going to start using it more.
Here's the deal. If you do see some yellow chartreuse, go ahead and pick some up because let's talk about that next season. I've got three bottles behind me and I got to tell you, I love yellow chartreuse. All right. So my find, and here's what I've found. So I go to the liquor store, and if it's a quality liquor store, I mean, they've got a good variety and it's not just all kind of like the names you recognize. Mm-hmm. I ask them, hey, what do you have by way of chartreuse? And now not everybody knows, but every once in a while you get somebody who just, they're kind of on their game and they understand the spirits that they're selling. So this guy gave me Boomsma Klooster Bitter, and it is from the Netherlands.
Wait, can you hold it up?
And it's an herbal bitter.
Oh, wow. That is a beautiful bottle, by the way.
Kind of like a terracotta, what is that, ceramic bottle?
Yeah.
And then I also have found that adding a little genepi, which this is just any old genepi, seems to bring a little more of those characters out. But what it lacks is, so this is only 40% or 80 proof. Mm-hmm. Chartreuse is 55%, which is 110 proof. So it doesn't have that bite like chartreuse does. And it's, quite frankly, I think this is about a 70% match because there's several elements that are missing.
Right.
But it's close enough that if I put this, and I did, I put this in hot chocolate, mm-hmm. it was still delicious. The herbal notes just, I just play so well with the chocolates.
I think for every sub you're going to find, it's about 70, 60, maybe 80% yeah. there.
Yeah, you just can't. There just never has been a duplicate ever. And there never will be. There just won't.
They keep that holding close to their hearts and they don't share that with too many people.
That's right. Again, I'll plug the episode on the history of chartreuse again. You need to listen to that. That's a cool history.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I think that we're all looking for a sub. So if you have any out there that we didn't mention that you think is a great substitution, please let us know, send us a message, comment, whatever it is. We're trying to find a solution too. So just let us know. Otherwise, we're going to go to France and smuggle some back.
Yeah. If you know people going to France, and I have asked people who are going to France, bring me back some chartreuse.
Yeah.
They do. They can find it there, but it's hard to get here.
There you go.
All right, Jules.
Chartreuse.
Damn monks.
We love you.
Well, there you have it. Cheers, Uncle Brad.
Cheers, Jules. And thank you, everyone, for listening to the show.
Don't worry, we will have the photos and recipes for today's cocktails on the website, joinjules.com.
And if you got questions or comments for us, hit us up on the Insta at The Art of Drinking Podcast. And of course, find Jules at Join Jules or at Favorite Uncle Brad. That's me, also on the Insta.
And hey, subscribe to my cocktail club on Facebook. All you'll need to do is search Join Jules Cocktail Club, and there you'll see what other cocktail enthusiasts are shaking up.
This is a Red Rock Music podcast.
Don't forget, subscribe, like, and review The Art of Drinking with Join Jules and your favorite uncle wherever you get your podcasts.